The summer that I was 13 was hands down the best of my youth. I had managed to get a volunteer job at Tumbleweed Day Camp as a junior counselor. And this was 1973, so authentic, open-hearted, hippie men still walked the earth. And a bunch of them worked as counselors at the camp, and about three of them took a shine to me and took me under their wing. And all summer long, they talked to me about philosophy and politics and music and literature. And for a Jewish kid who had decided not to have a bar mitzvah, this was the coming of age I really wanted. And then there were the kids. I was partially responsible for a troop of 16, 7-year-olds. And I liked it. I liked having that responsibility. I got a little drunk with power. I liked the kids. They liked me. The activities were fun. I mean, the only thing that threatened to darken this golden summer was that I had developed a crush on Amy Selman, who was also a junior counselor. Now, at this point, I've been going to an all-boys school for about 2 years, and I just didn't know how to be around girls my own age on a regular basis. And Amy had qualities that fascinated me. She was female. And that was primarily it. I mean, you know, she was also smart, and she had a sense of humor, and she was pretty, but she was a girl. And, you know, that was critical. That was something to build on. But again, I've been going to an all-boys school, and my comfort zone when it came to the opposite sex had just evaporated. And I was going through a puberty that turned my body into a clown car. And I just never knew what was going to pop out. And this just really was wreaking havoc with my social radar, you know, because I couldn't tell how Amy felt about me. You know, I couldn't read the signs. I couldn't tell if there were any signs. And so one by one, I went to the open-hearted hippie men and, you know, explained the situation. And I would have been so relieved if they had gone, "Dude, if you like her and you don't know how she feels about you, there's nothing you can do." You know, because that would have taken the pressure off. But of course, they told me to, you know, find my voice and speak my truth and tell her how I felt. And that wasn't going to happen. I mean, because at 13, I had this really strong sense that rejection from a girl would destroy me. You know, like sunlight hitting a vampire, you know, that I turned to bones and crumbled to dust. And I didn't want to be dust. I was starting to like my life. And this was when John Sigaloff offered to come to the rescue. Now, John had been my friend since fifth grade. He was a prodigy in science and electronics. At the age of 11, he had bugged every phone in his parents' house. And he used to play me tapes of his older brother talking to his girlfriend or his parents talking to the principal of the school about why John had gotten in trouble again. And sometimes he would call me over to his house because he had a new gadget. And, you know, he needed some creative spin or some kind of scenario. There was one time he'd built a transmitter that could preempt the strongest AM radio signal within like 10 square miles. And so we cut into the most popular talk radio station in Los Angeles. And I don't know if anybody, you know, was listening within those 10 miles, but if they had been, they would have heard the aliens interrupting and announcing that they had taken talk radio hostage, and that if the Earthlings wanted it back, they had to leave a bag of cash in the parking lot of the local pharmacy. So, you know, John was science, and I was humanities, and I was a good kid, and he was not so much. There were a couple of times that I saw him lock horns with his parents, and that argument would just escalate, and he would start shrieking curse words and terrible names at them, and I would go white as a sheet. And he would look at me afterwards and shrug as if to say, yeah, that had to happen. So John said to me, look, I'll call her. I'll call Amy. I'll tell her you're my friend. You like her. You're shy. And you want to know if she likes you. And I'll tape the whole thing and play it for you. This would not be the last time I was seduced by technology. So we agree that this would go down on Sunday. And that Sunday evening, he rode his bike over to my house and handed me a cassette. And I said, well, I mean, how did it go? And he said, good and bad. I think you got the answer you wanted. And so we went into my room and put the cassette in the tape recorder and hit play. The best thing that I can say about what I heard was that the sound quality was excellent. I mean, John was very talented, and I owe him that due. But the conversation went like this. Hello? Yeah, can I speak to Amy? This is Amy. Amy, you don't know me. I'm a friend of Mike Kaplan's, and he told me that he likes you, and he wants to know if you like him. Yeah, I don't believe you. Now, this was an unexpected twist, you know, because when we worked it out, it was plausible and it was airtight, and I just didn't understand how it was going to go sideways like this. I mean, it did concern me that he dropped the part about me being shy, you know, because that kind of sold it and rounded things out, but, you know, it was out of my hands. No, I swear, I know Mike Kaplan, and he likes you, but he doesn't know how you feel about him. Yeah, I don't believe you. Look, I've known Mike Kaplan since fifth grade. I know he works at Tumbleweed. I know you work there too. I know that he likes you a lot, but he doesn't know how you feel about him. Can you see why he wants me to ask you, do you like him? No. You don't like him? No, I don't think you're telling the truth. And John stopped the tape and looked at me with triumph. Did you hear how she corrected me? I thought that she was saying, no, I don't like you. But she was saying, no, I meant, no, I don't think you're telling the truth. And I guess he had a point, but it wasn't like the room filled with Gershwin music at that moment. You know, and I wasn't going to build a romantic, happy ending on a series of misinterpreted no's. So, you know, I told him, keep playing. And he gave a little grimace and pushed the button. Why don't you think I'm telling the truth? Because it's a prank call. That is the stupidest. I mean, who would do a prank call like that? I don't know. Someone creepy, which is what you sound like. Well, you sound like a little fucking bitch, click. And I sat there, devastated, and he gave me the shrug. That had to happen. But it didn't have to happen. If I had had a thimbleful of courage, if I had been willing to take the risk, it wouldn't have had to happen. And as you can imagine, this is one of the major wince moments of my adolescence. And, you know, from time to time, I take it out of the box and I think about what I learned. For instance, never outsource your romantic life. Especially to a boy with anger issues. Also, Rejection stings, and it can suck, but it won't destroy you. But sadly, the biggest thing I learned on Monday and for the last 2 weeks of camp, with every glare and every roll of the eyes, the biggest thing I learned was exactly how Amy Slevin felt about me. Thank you.